This is Dave in the City, brought to you by Locks of the Week Radio. Good morning, sports fans. It's a pleasure to have you here for the big Wednesday show as we begin to talk another round of sports here on Locks of the Week Radio. I'm Dave Medina, and tonight we have one of the big matchups of the week here in sports. Two big teams, two big markets, and two upstart franchises. It's the New York Rangers and the Los Angeles Hockey Kings here in the NHL at the Garden tonight. 7 o'clock here in the city that never sleeps, the Big Apple, New York, New York. What a great game we're going to have tonight. But no one cares, it's the NHL. But this is going to be a very, very, very good game. And I'm telling you, this is going to be some fun. Now, I don't know a whole lot. We don't know exactly how good these teams are going to be this season. Rangers are coming off a 5-game winning streak. Kings are coming off a 4-game winning streak. They're going to meet. You've got two very, very young, capable goaltenders. Jonathan Quick for the Kings. Henrik Lundqvist for the New York Rangers. This is going to be a good game. We know the Rangers can score goals. We know the Kings have their ability to lock down teams on defense. I haven't really seen too many of their games this season, but we remember from last season they were very, really good on faceoffs, so they can control the puck, and they can control the game if they don't let things get out of hand. It's a young team, and for both teams, and it's a very young team. And now, while LA hadn't really been to the playoffs in a really long time, since 2002, to be specific, and while the New York Rangers really haven't done much past the divisional round, these are two teams that are to be reckoned with here in the NHL. This is going to be a good matchup. So, Kings, Rangers tonight from Madison Square Garden in New York. We're going to have some fun tonight if you are a hockey fan. So that's what's happening here in the city. On the show today, on our podcast, the Yankee three-man rotation and this. People have been really rumbling about the impending or potential stake in ownership by one Rush Limbaugh. Now we know who Rush Limbaugh is. He's a conservative talk show host. He has millions and millions of listeners, more listeners than anybody in sports radio could dream of. He makes tons of money. And he's just very, very, very polarizing, to say the least. But you know what? He's also very entertaining. And I think if you take them with a grain of salt, you recognize that he's very good as a broadcaster. I mean, he can convey a message pretty effectively. Whether he's right or wrong is irrelevant. So he's got his opinions, and yeah, you know, he's not popular with a lot of people. But you know, this little thing about him taking an ownership of a team, he's going to take an ownership stake in the Rams. Number one, it's the Rams. Okay, who cares? The Rams. People are getting uptight about the Rams. People didn't want to play for the Rams anyway. So what's the deal? Secondly, players who are complaining about his ethics or what he says about certain types of people or his discrimination, get over yourselves. I mean, number one, he's going to put all that stuff aside when he becomes an owner of the team. I mean, at the end, he just wants to win. You know, people forget that Rush Limbaugh is as big a football fan as you and I am. And yet, you know, people just say, well, he's a politically charged figure. He's going to want this and that. He's going to want this. Well, I mean, come on. He's going to own, like, what, 1% of the team? Do you think he's really going to have that much power? One. Two, I don't think he's going to get into that kind of mode. I mean, what he says about his politics are about politicians. What he says about certain elements of society, that's society. But this is just football. I mean, this is football. It's about who he... I mean, he just... In football, he's just a regular old average Joe when it comes to football. And it's really interesting because, this is going to lead up to an interesting topic, but he spent a very short while on ESPN. When he was there, he was just talking about the games. He was talking about players. He was talking about action and all that stuff. Just being a football analyst. And he was pretty good. I mean, if you heard him for a little while, he wasn't that bad. But then he did let himself get a little carried away. He said that the media was protecting Donovan McNabb because he was a black quarterback. And then all the balls started tumbling down. Now players are like, oh, I can't stand this guy. I don't want to touch this. I don't want to play for him. But, I mean, really, he's not going to be the head coach. He's not going to be the general manager. He's not going to be anything. He's just going to be an owner of the team. So, you know, Rush Limbaugh is the kind of guy that I think would put aside his political differences for the sake of ownership. Because he's just a football guy just like you and I in the end. And if he's going to do that, then I think it's only fair for all the players who would play for him in theory, and all the coaches who would coach for him in theory, and all the owners who would own the team with him in theory, to do the same. It's only right. It's only fair. After all, if we can put aside our differences to let Michael Vick play for one of our teams, and if we can put aside differences to give Pac-Man Jones, a complete thug and a really terrible human being, a second and a third chance, and if Tank Johnson is still playing in the league, and if Chris Henry's still out there, then honestly, what is the difference between that and having a guy like Rush Limbaugh own a team? There's no difference. So, you know, players, get over yourselves. Who cares? You know, I thought this was America. I thought this was a free country. I thought people had the chance to own teams they wanted to own if they had the money for it. Now you got people like Colts owner Jim Irsay blocking him. You've got guys like Al Sharpton getting on the case. Al Sharpton, if he hears the word black and then something negative about it, he'll just be at it. He could even be at a bakery protesting cookies because people don't like the chocolate cookies or the Black Forest cake. He would. He would do that. Guy's a little over it. Anyway, what this whole thing is about Rush Limbaugh team ownership. Number one, the reason he did it in the first place is to bring attention to him and his show. And ultimately, I think what it was a way to get himself some more listeners. And you better believe that people are listening to the show. People who don't even normally listen to the show. People who normally listen to sports. They figure, wow, this guy's owning a team. Let me go tune over here and see what he has to say. Don't think that's not part of the plan. He may not even get the ownership bid, and yet he will have gained so much in making the attempt. I mean, quite honestly, I do not see why people would get so uptight over this. I mean, if you really think he's intolerant, and you really think he's a bit of a fascist, and these things may or may not be true, then don't be the same way in trying to exclude him from owning a team. It's not right. I mean, it's not as if he's going to try to implement his political agenda on the team. It's just sports. People don't do that with sports. It's just sports. Players, managing, on-the-field stuff. It's just sports. Man, I mean, please, let these humans be humans. He's got his opinions. What's wrong with that? Their opinions. We don't have to like him. I don't like him. You know, I mean, it's just an opinion. Let it go. Isn't that what part of America is about anyway? Allowing people to express their opinions. That's the beauty of this whole thing. If you don't like it, make your own opinion. Make your own stand. Or don't listen. Which I think most people do. Or don't. You know? If you really don't want to play for a team with Rush Limbaugh involved, then don't play for the team. But you know you will, especially if they offer you a bunch of money. So, I mean, the whole thing is ridiculous. Players are getting out of hand. Coaches are nuts. Owners are nuts. I mean, come on. Let the guy own a team. Don't be communist about it. Let him own the team. If he wants to own a team, I think he has the right to own a team. What has he actually done to not be deserving of owning a team? Now, I know the NFL is a private entity, and they certainly have the power disallow any kind of involvement if it means that, you know, if they're concerned, for example, that let's say Rush Limbaugh would get in there and then suddenly start trying to do all their promotional advertisements to become to promote conservative politics during the game or something like that. He's not going to do that. Come on. People are overreacting to this whole thing. Limbaugh, I mean, he just wants to own a team. He wants to have a stake in the NFL. He loves the NFL. I really think his intent is very pure. He just wants to own a part of the team and be involved in some element of NFL ownership. I honestly think that's it. You know, before he had his big talk show, he was just a guy. He was just another good old guy from about the Pittsburgh area. I think he's from Pennsylvania. And he was really just one of us. And he stopped being one of us when he had a voice and a platform and something to talk about. But I do remember hearing one time that Rush Limbaugh didn't really have any real interest in politics until he recognized that he had the chance to make an impact in going into that field. It's kind of like something revolutionary for him. He recognized that there was a need in radio, one that had never been explored before, the concept of conservative talk. Why? Well, because if you look at it up until that point, media coverage is pretty lopsided in favor of the liberals. I mean, that's just, I mean, you look at the news reports, you look at the way things were slanted, there needed to be some counter, there needs to be a counterpoint to the point. And he provided a big part of that counterpoint and launched a huge industry in radio. I really don't see what he's really doing criminally wrong here. And his opinions, while a lot of them are controversial, they are very honest opinions. And I think he has the right to express them. And as part of that, many people have the right to express their dissatisfaction. And I think that's what we're seeing today. But really, I don't know if he's going to really try to push his agenda on this team. All he's going to do is own a team and have fun with it. I mean, why can't he do that? I mean, I think he's earned the right. He's earned a good living. I mean, certainly he's had a profound impact on many people's lives, for the better or for the worse. I'll let you decide. But the point is, he's earned himself the right to do this. Why are we giving him such a hard time? I mean, you're pretty much contradicting yourself in the whole concept of freedom in America. You know, it all starts from within. If you don't allow this, you're really just not doing what you think, what you say that you're going to, what you say you want to do ideally for the human condition. So if a Jimmer, say, does succeed in blocking them from owning a team, and if players truly do boycott the act to a point where Rush Limbaugh just gives up and decides not to have a part of the Rams, then what are you really proving? You know, I mean, if your beef with Limbaugh is that he's promoting a type of politics or a type of political platform that, let's say, restricts or constricts the act of being an individual or being of a different ethnicity or being of a different lifestyle or simply not following one set of rules, then why are you basically adhering to those kind of principles by restricting somebody from getting out? Like, so if you don't like the fact that he talks about wishing that he could lock down people or he could take people and deport them, or if you don't like the idea that he mentioned that he expresses the desire to try to make things a little bit, try to cut out some of the fat in society, well, if you want him to be more open-minded, then you need to be more open-minded too. You can't be, well, he's not one of our kind of owners. He's not one of those kind of people. He's not one of our people. You know, just because open-minded means you got to accept people that you may not completely agree with, that you may not completely be on the same page with. That's part of it too. And I really think that all of these guys need to be a little open-minded. Homogeny can suck on many different levels. So even if the frosting on the batter is something a little bitter, I still think it should be entertained and welcomed. And you know what, if he falls on his face, then, well, hey, look, he proved him, he had his chance, and he proved that he couldn't do it. But this really is kind of hypocritical for anyone to go after them for this. You know, you can't say that you don't want to hire a guy because he's not open-minded and then not be open-minded yourself. Give the guy a chance, at least, as an NFL owner. It's not as if he will be so adamant with his own personal opinions about politics and life that he'll impose it on the team. And even if he did, there's no way he would be able to put himself in position to act. He's not going to be doing a hostile takeover of the Rams. Come on. Didn't have time for that. I mean, it's not worth his time or money. So the whole thing's just out of hand. I mean, people, let it go. Let it go. You know, if he just did it and there were no news reports about it, nobody would even make even a single holler about it. But then that they made all this publicity about it, the whole thing got out of control. It's nuts. Let Rush Limbaugh own the team if he wants. And if they're bored of the St. Louis Rams decides not to do it, then fine. But you just can't be saying, well, we can't do this because the guy is just not going to be accepting. And then you all of a sudden do basically the same thing by not letting him in, not being open-minded, accepting someone for who he is, not what he is. Got to practice what you preach. And I think for all those who oppose the concept, give it a chance. Jeez. That's all I have on that. But you can see why it just kind of irks me in a little bit. You see, players continuously defend guys. Like for example, a Vince Young. It can be so immature. You know, no, Vince Young is actually not doing anything wrong. And he's a good guy. Vince Young is fine. But, you know, he did have a lot of problems as far as being able to focus and being able to be committed to his game and learning and trying to grow. Those were some real problems. And Michael Vick had some problems. I mean, not even just looking past his criminal record. He had problems being a good teammate. He was not on time for practices. And he didn't ever try hard enough to learn and improve and make his team better. That's a good enough reason not to really be fond of Michael Vick on the NFL level. But he'd always have his teammates, oh, well, you know, I think he still deserves to be a player. You know, even though he got to look past this and that. Well, if you're going to say that, then you better be willing to do the same thing on the ownership level, too. That's all I have. This is Dave in the city on Locks of the Week Radio, where it's talking full hour, full coverage today. Man, it is a slow, slow day. You know, no sports last night. None. Not even a baseball game, not even a compelling hockey game. NBA preseason, there's nothing. There was nothing last night in the sports landscape. So a day like this is tough to digest. You just hope that something develops. Breaking news, Alex Rodriguez breaks his leg. You know, something like that. But here's the biggest news that we've seen so far as the postseason. Now, we discussed the matchups in depth a little bit on the last podcast. Here's the latest from the New York Yankees. The Yankees have agreed and decided to go with a 3-man rotation for the AL Championship Series, which is a little unusual because normally teams will go with a 4-man rotation to help spread out the starts so that no one gets tired. So here's how it will work. CC Sabathia will be the first starter. He'll be the ace. He'll start first. AJ Burnett, the number 2, and Andy Pettit, number 3. The reason to do this, according to manager Joe Girardi, is to keep Jabba Chamberlain and Chad Gaudin in the bullpen. Here's his reasoning. It looks like we have some rain in the forecast, so that can change things, Girardi said Tuesday during a conference call. We are definitely considering possibly going to a 3-man rotation in this round, but we'll have to take a look and see how it goes. Now, this is very interesting. So basically, he's saying that if there's going to be enough rain during the series, the possibility exists that even with a 3-man rotation, there could still be the regular amount of rest for each pitcher. Pitchers normally get 4 days of rest. Then they pitch. if there is some kind of a rain delay, that will certainly be the case for many of these guys. It's a very risky move. Ballsy move. Very, very, very dangerous move as well. But it's not as if this isn't subject to change. I kind of like this. Now, I don't know if this is really going to work out. I mean, the odds are definitely against him. But, I mean, it's obviously a way to just keep Jabba in the pen, because apparently they're just so hell-bent on keeping him out of the rotation. And it's interesting, because, well, let's say that they did go with a three-man rotation, and one of their guys just becomes a complete eyesore in their start. They have two guys that can work in as long relievers in Jabba and Chad. They could either of them could really spell the starters in case of emergency. I think that's what Joe Girardi's plan is. And personally, I think that's a good plan. I think that's a pretty good idea. And especially against the Angels of Anaheim of Los Angeles, this could play out very, very well. Very, very well. You know, one rain delay, one postponed night will really make that three-man rotation work. You know, why not? So if they can find a way, if somehow the schedule works out so that fewer of these guys get 3 days of rest, then the Yankees could be solid with a three-man rotation. But it is very risky. It is very, very, very risky. And it kind of shows me that it was, to me, a sign of weakness, the decision to do this. But it wasn't a bad decision. But still, you're looking at a Yankee team that now has pretty much announced to the world that we don't have any depth in our rotation beyond the first three. But the fourth starter in the playoffs, I mean, how important could that be, right? I mean, is he the difference in the entire series? Probably not, you know. So it's not the worst thing in the world. Three-man rotation might, in fact, work out. But I can see that Girardi's doing this with the having in mind the possibility, I should say, that the Yanks will have an extra day off due to rain delay or whatever. Well, you better hope he's right, because if the weather is perfect, then you have some decisions to make. Real, real decisions to make. And if this thing blows up in his face, oh, you know everyone's going to go after him. Oh, my goodness. The radio will go after him. The TV will go after him. All the newspapers will go after him. They will kill him. They will rake him across the coals. They will fry him on a grill. They will fricassee him in a fryer. They will toast him. This is ballsy, but it's kind of interesting. And this is signature Girardi from the standpoint that I wouldn't see other managers do this strictly, just off the cuff. Clearly, he wouldn't do this if he had a more reliable fourth starter. But having said that, I think this is really, really a very shrewd move and kind of creative on his part. Boy, the ALCS, I can't wait for this thing to start, man. I cannot wait. Man, oh man, oh man. This is going to be really, really riveting. Should be good stuff. So we tune in here in the city on Locks of the Week Radio, talking sports with you. Pretty much waiting. We're waiting a lot until a lot of these big things happen. Again, the hockey game tonight, NHL, big matchup. Starts in the NHL, you know, it's a little early. We'll get into that in another month. But let's look at what's happening in the NFL now. And look at some of these teams that are kind of treading the line. Guys who are under 500 but could still make the playoffs. Are there teams like that of that caliber? Absolutely. First of all and foremost, let's look at the obvious choice. The Miami Dolphins. 2-3 now. They started off 0-3. But I really think this team could do this. And after seeing Chad Henne last night, I think it confirmed it. I honestly think they could make this happen. They're 2-3 now. They have a very tough game against the New Orleans Saints. But what if they win? Man, they're going to be in a good spot. And as it is, they're only a game out because the Jets lost to the Dolphins and the Patriots lost to the Denver Broncos. Both teams are 3-2. So only a game between those two and Miami. I mean, this could be a good team. Their defense, okay, their defense really wasn't that great last night. But their defense is good enough. And I think their running game is very good. And I think, well, the passing attack is fine. Will Henny be able to keep that pace that he had last night? Probably not. But he could be pretty good. So that's a team you got to look out for in the rest of the season. Jacksonville Jaguars. It's a little early to say it, but I do think this team could be in for a big ride to the playoffs. Seriously. I mean, this is a team that, you know, maybe they weren't as bad as they were last year, and maybe they weren't as great as they were in 2007. This team looks like somewhere in the middle. They did start off 0-2, but, well, believe it or not, they're starting to make their way back to mediocrity, and for them, pretty good. A lot of it has been on the shoulders of Maurice Jones-Drew. Now having full-time carries with Fred Taylor out, Drew has piled up quite a few gaudy statistics over the course of 4 to 5 weeks. Now, they got their butts kicked against Seattle on Sunday. There is no doubt about it. But even as bad as Seattle is, they still play pretty tough over at Quest Field. Maybe we can throw that one out. Outside of that, they had two pretty convincing wins, one against Tennessee, one against Houston. Not bad, not bad. So up next, they have St. Louis. You have to figure they'd win that one. Then a bye week, after which they will play Tennessee again. Now, we're far enough into the season where we can pretty much judge how the matchup's going to look as you project in a couple of weeks into the future. And I think this is going to look pretty good for the Jacksonville Jaguars. I mean, this team clearly could end up finishing right around 8-8, 9-7. I truly think that this could be a very, 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 very... This could be a very, very good run for the Jacksonville Jaguars. But it's a little early to really tell for sure. Their defense is going to have to play even better than they're playing now. We'll see. So two teams already, Dolphins and Jags, who could make a run even though they are under 500. The San Diego Chargers are another one of these teams. They started off 0-2, but now they're 2-2. They caught up. So that's kind of on the edge. It doesn't really count as a losing team. But, you know, why do I get the feeling they're going to win against the Denver Broncos this week? Doesn't seem to make a whole lot of sense, right? But I honestly believe that the Chargers are better than the Broncos. They have better talent than the Broncos. I think they have better defense than the Broncos, although maybe that's misguided. They have easily the better quarterback between the two teams. And the running game, I think, would be their only flaw right now. They have had a really tough time running the football lately. And, you know, no Sean Moreno versus the combined forces of Darren Sproles, LaDainian Tomlinson, what have you, do not match. No Sean Moreno in a sweep. But all told, I really feel like the Chargers can take the Broncos. And, you know, in the past, the Chargers have really torn up the Broncos at Denver. I feel like more of the same could happen. A lot of the players are still the same, as you know. And Antonio Gates in particular, ooh, man, he can be good, especially at Invesco. That's a team to watch. All right, so we have the Chargers, Dolphins, and the Jacksonville Jaguars, two teams that could really make a run to the playoffs that we don't really see coming. After that, it gets kind of tough. I would say that the Cardinals would be another one of those teams, although because they're 2-2, but they were 1-2 going in, they won. They could make a run in the playoffs after all. It's probably going to be about a similar year that they had last year, basically a 500 team. Play pretty well at home, don't play so well on the road. But I think the difference is they won't be quite as exposed defensively as they were a year ago. We'll see. Seahawks, no, they suck, so forget them. The only other team I could really think of that could make a potential run, I would say that maybe the Packers would be that team. They are, however, 2-2. But I have just been so disappointed in their defense. It really hasn't shown up this year. So personally, I will not put them in the discussion. So while they're 2-2, while they could finish 8-8, the problem with that with them is there's two teams that are ahead of them, and they're better. Clearly better. Bears are better. Vikings are better. That's over. So your potential surprise teams are the Arizona Cardinals, the Miami Dolphins, the Jacksonville Jaguars, and the San Diego Chargers. Those are teams that could make a big run, and they could be in a playoff spot at the end of the year. Very, very something to watch as we start to enter the second, third, so to speak, of the NFL season. You're listening to Dave in the City on Locks of the Week Radio. And now, with the remaining time we have left, let's touch on a few things that have been on my mind this week as we prepare for the weekend previews for the NFL and for college. All right, so, you know, one thing about the upcoming NLCS, which is still not for 2 days yet, is that, you know, a lot of people have predetermined that the Phillies are going to win the series. People are like, oh, the Phillies are so good. The Phillies take this. The Phillies take that. The Phillies are better in here. And the Phillies are just this and that. Oh, the Phillies, they're defending champions. Woo, woo, woo. And quite honestly, I think that many of these statements are true. The lineup of the Phillies is probably, now that we look at it, the best lineup in the playoffs. Of all the playoff teams, the Phillies lineup is heads and shoulders above the rest. But the Dodgers lineup isn't bad. But the Phillies lineup is better. But still, the Dodgers lineup is not like that much worse than that of the Phils. The other thing, though, about the Phillies, people are talking about how their rotation, well, it's not that great. I've been saying this. But it's not that bad. Because their top two are tremendous. Well, okay, their top one is tremendous, and their top two are good. Hamels, not really that great. But Cliff Lee, unbelievable. Unbelievable! Now, is this because Cliff Lee just happens to have such a fantastic pitching matchup against the Rockies? Or is it because Cliff Lee has really been a very good pitcher all year? I am undecided on that. So it's going to be really interesting to see how the Dodgers will do against Cliff Lee. We'll see. Bullpen-wise, we've already mentioned that the Dodgers have a better advantage there. But the thing I really am going to enjoy more than anything else in the series is that Phillies bullpen. Man, when they get to the ninth inning and they have Lidge up there, it's going to be pure excitement, pure entertainment. I can't wait to see that. I really can't. So, you know, I'm going to get into the analytics of it later. You know, I'll get into the analytics of it a little bit later. I did it before, too. Bottom line is, oh, God. I just cannot consider the thought of the Phillies in the World Series again. Jeez. The last time a National League team went to back-to-back World Series, you have to go back to the Atlanta Braves, 95-96. They won it all in 95. 96, they went into the World Series. They looked like they were going to be back-to-back champions. But all of a sudden, out of nowhere, the then underdog Yankees took care of them in six games. Look at that bullpen. That bullpen of the 96 team was amazing for the Yankees. Whoa. So, having said that, it seems to me that the Phillies could be something really special if they pull this off. If they get this done, if they can beat the Dodgers with their pretty deep lineup and their pretty deep bullpen, without the home field advantage, because remember, last year they had home field advantage, which I think helped them. People can talk about how home field's overrated, but man, in this particular instance, I think it was a difference in that series. Because you imagine if those two games were played in LA, for example, you know, you never know. But here's a couple of things that are very interesting heading into the NLCS this week. Last year, if you look at all the predictions, many of them predicted the Dodgers to win that series in 6, 7, or even 5. Think about that for a minute. So even though the Dodgers were clear underdogs going into the series against Chicago, everybody rode the wave. They rode the wave, and they suddenly just they suddenly made the Dodgers the team to beat in the NL over the course of 3 days. So they went from being nothing to being the team to beat in the National League. Seems a little extreme. And surely enough, it was an overreaction. The Phillies were clearly better than the Dodgers last season. It hurt. It did. Game 4 hurt. Game 5 hurt. Game 2 hurt. Game 2 really hurt. No, Game 4 really hurt. Game 2 hurt. Anyway, the bottom line is the Phillies were, in fact, the better team. But it kind of, but a big part of what made them win, I think, was the fact that they really felt like they were overlooked, and they used that as motivation. Teams do this all the time. But the fact that the Dodgers were looked at as a clear, overwhelming favorite took, I think, really put the Phillies in position to take the world by surprise in beating the Dodgers so handily. 5 games. Yeah, you could always say that a bounce here or a bounce there would have put things in a different spot, and it would have become a more interesting series had a certain play had landed somewhere else, or had they made one pitching change differently. Things like that will certainly come into play. They will. But again, I think the Phillies were really regarded as underdogs in that championship series last year. I mean, the whole thing is really interesting. So again, Dodgers seem like the favorite to many people. They thought the Phillies were really that same team from 2007 that kind of was just happy to be there. Turns out the situation was reversed. The Dodgers looked like they were happy to be there. They were clearly like a deer in headlights after Game 2. No doubt. They were not ready for the series. I think that's the bottom line. They weren't ready. And fact is, they didn't have enough pitching to counteract all those left-handed starters. I mean, left-handed batters. This year, they do have those guys. It's like they got better. It's like they learned. It's as if they knew that they were going to face the Phillies again. That's what's really fascinating about this matchup. It's as if the Dodgers knew that at the end of the year, they were going to meet this team again somehow, some way, and they were going to be in the path to the championship. They knew. And this is kind of like something I used to see in the NBA, or and I still do, on many levels, quite a lot. I would see teams who would struggle to get over the hump against a particular opponent. But then somehow they would get different players. They would learn. They would just start to motivate themselves with that loss or that embarrassment in the previous postseason. They'd just spend the whole year just thinking about that game. And they'd be like, oh, I want them back. I want to go back. And we've seen this with teams all throughout the years, Chicago and Detroit. They'd never get past Detroit. And it was their goal in life to get past the Detroit Pistons. And they finally did in 1991. They kicked their ass. Remember that? A 4-game sweep. Oh, people can talk about, oh, well, the Pistons were so old by then. Are you kidding me? They didn't start becoming good until 1988. And then they tore apart in the 1990. You're telling me they suddenly became really old overnight? Eh, maybe. But point is, Chicago just came in with such fire at the end of this. They finally just made it their will to beat whoever got in their way, including the Pistons, on their way to the championship. Now, it's a little more subtle in baseball, the way that this thing works. But I do think the Dodgers were determined to prove to everybody they can hang with the Phillies. So that's what's really exciting about this series. And I can't stand the Phillies. I can't stand crying Hawaiian Victorino. I can't stand people. Well, I mean, I like Ryan Howard, though. He's a great player. I love the guy. He's a good guy. But I can't stand Brett Myers. May he rot in the standings, I guess. Guy's a douche. All he does is hit people. He's not a good pitcher. Give me a break. I don't even think Cole Hamels is a little bit off-putting for me. And I generally don't dislike him, but I don't really like him. I don't really think he's that great. And I can't truly be against a guy like Chase Utley because he's from Pasadena. I mean, I can't dislike a guy like that. Come on. But I can kind of get a little miffed at Jason Worth, who did nothing when he was with the Dodgers. He just was an injury a minute Oh, and now he plays great. Now he starts hitting home runs. Oh, please. That ballpark probably gave you half your home runs. Give me a break. And that goofball Lidge, who thankfully is getting his just desserts finally. God. Oh, the perfect closer. We knew this was a mirage. We knew it. We knew this guy was a one-year wonder, and that was it. Because before the big year he had last year, what was Lidge known most for? Blowing that huge lead to Albert Pujols in the LCS against the Cardinals. And it was like this thing that rattled his mind forever. It took him years to shake that. And anytime a guy would hit a home run against him at Minute Maid Park, it would be like reminding him of that day. Now I know the Astros won the series that year eventually. But, you know, this was when Lidge was with the Astros, as you remember. But still, you know, that's what people knew him for. Oh, man, he gives up big runs, big innings in the playoffs. It wasn't until he had the most perfect season imaginable that he would finally be regarded as, wow, he's good. But, you know, that was 1 year. All the other years, oh boy, here comes Lidge. Who was? Oh boy, well, throw up your hands. Oh, here we go. What's going to happen now? Oh my God, oh no. Hang on, hold on to your hats. That's the real Brad Lidge. You know? So, when you put it all together, the Phillies had patchworked a pitching staff, and many of them pitched the games of their life all at once. We don't see that anymore. Cliff Lee is just a legitimately good pitcher. So too is Hamels, but Hamels is hurt. So that alone kind of really downgrades their rotation. I'm just saying that the Phillies are not invincible. You know? People are like, well, they're so gritty and gutty. Oh, they're so fantastic. Oh, they're so determined. Oh, look at their heart. Every team has heart. Don't give me the heart. Every team has heart. Angels have heart. Red Sox have heart. Even teams that lose have heart. Don't tell me that the Cardinals didn't have heart. They had plenty of heart. They had Did you see the pitching performance by Adam Wainwright last week? That was as hearty as it gets. He pitched fantastically. And if he had another opportunity, he would have done the same thing, probably. There's plenty of heart in the game. So don't give me, well, they're the team of heart. Every team plays with heart, with exception. 49ers last week, no heart. But other than that, every team plays with heart in the majors, in all sports, to be honest, especially in the postseason. So, you know, the heart thing's overrated. Oh, what about how'd that heart work out for the Red Sox last Sunday? They gave up 3 runs in the 9th inning. So there you go. Heart is not really the end-all be-all. Then there's this whole thing about, well, the Phillies are tough. They're a tough team. Oh, the tough Phillies. They're so tough. They're not that tough. Shane Victorino, he gets brushed with a ball. He's just jumping around like a little girl. Oh, I got hit. Ah! Oh, I just want me. Ah! What a boob. I mean, really, I mean, this is a guy that really, if he tripped and he twisted an ankle, I wouldn't care. That's a little mean to say. I don't root for injuries, and that's not really an injury. But if he, let's say he slipped and he fell down and missed a fly ball and went to the wall, kind of something similar to what happened, I think it was on Monday night against the Rockies, in a game that the Phillies eventually won, but still. Something like that, if it happened to Shane Victorino, I would not care. I wouldn't be, aw, oh, poor Shane Victorino. He dropped a fly ball in a crucial spot. Oh, forget that. He had it coming. Eeh. So, Victorino can put himself to bed as he thinks about how he's been wronged in life. And Brett Myers, I've already discussed him. He's been exposed finally for the choke tank, for the... for the goofball that he, well, for the chuck that he is. Yeah, he's a chuck. Just chucks home runs. He chucks it all. Chucks everything. He's a chucker. What a chuck. That's why I don't have a lot of respect for the Phillies. I think it's been outlined and documented in detail. I just don't care for this team. I don't. Charlie Manuel's a nice guy. He is. But he's not a good manager. He's really gotten away with a lot of things. Pitching decisions, lineup moves, you name it. You know? He's been very fortunate. But the whole thing about Philly toughness is really overrated. Some of these guys are some of the bitchiest players I've ever seen in sports. They're not a tough Phillies. Give me a break. You know? Honest to God. Tough. So, yes, I would be pretty thrilled if the Phillies went down here in the LCS for obvious reasons. But they do present a very, very good matchup, and I think they should be, rightfully, the team to beat. They should be the favored team, and they are. So that's a very marked difference between this year's team and last year's Philly team. Last year's Philly team truly was an underdog because people were just simply thinking, well, Brewers might have a chance, until they didn't. And they thought, oh, yeah, well, Dodgers should be the one to beat them, until they didn't. But this time around, because they're defending champions, because they got the experience, it's basically the same team with some improvements in certain areas. You look at that Philly lineup, you say, you know what, this is the team that really, it's their series to lose despite the fact they don't have home field advantage. And I think that's a rightful thing to say. That's a fair assessment. So this time, they will be the ones that will be the hunted, not the hunters. And the Dodgers, people just look back at last year. Oh, look how terribly they played. Oh, look at how Jed Billingsley gave up all those runs in game two. Oh, look how much Broxton choked in game four. They're not going to be given a lot of respect going into the series. And in honest terms, rightfully, they shouldn't. So there you have it. You have a very, very compelling matchup in the NLCS. You have teams with a lot to prove. Even though the Phillies have already won a championship the year before, they have plenty to prove. They want to prove that maybe their pitching wasn't a fluke, even if it is. They want to prove that their lineup can get this thing done again. They want to prove that they don't rest on their laurels. And they want to prove that they can get that they are legitimate. That maybe they got in because they were actually good, not just because the Mets flunked all the time. And right now they have a compelling case. And right now the Dodgers have a compelling case that their season was no joke. And seeing how they stormed past the Cardinals, they may well be very good. I see the series going six. Again, I say that, yes, it's a different perspective this time around. And I think that's the beauty of this series. It's a really wonderfully crafted sequel to a very good LCS the year before. And I think this will be an improvement on last year's LCS. Both teams will come to play. Both teams are going to be very competitive. Many of these games will be close. There might be one blowout in the mix. But you're going to see some tight, intense games in this series. I mean, I just see a lot of these things and a lot of things balance out. It's going to be great. So, I mean, I cannot wait to see this happen. I really hope that the Phillies go down. But that's why they play the games. We will see what happens. Thanks again here for listening in the city on Locks of the Week Radio. I'm Dave Medina. Have a wonderful day, all. We'll return and see you again with more previews. We may give you a chance to look at the upcoming football weekend. Until then, we'll see you next time.